Comments or questions on those remarks? Otherwise, Ian, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Paul. Good morning, everybody. First of all, apologies from Hans. He's had to be overseas today, so he's not able to make it. He was happy to pass it to me because he knows I've got Alan and Sue to back me up and keep me out of trouble. I'll be reasonably brief, just teeing it up, mainly because Alan and Sue are going to do the detail. And I should, while I'm mentioning them, our senior technical directors, congratulate Sue on your behalf on her appointment to the board from 1st of January next year. So we're very happy about that. Sue's happy at the moment. Once she gets on the board, she mightn't be quite so happy, but still. And the other reason I'll be brief is that we are discussing a lot of the items in this agenda paper one during the meeting. I've listed down concepts, SMEs, post-implementation reviews, SF, classification and measurement and insurance. We're all discussing in detail later on, so I won't go into too much detail just now. So starting with first things first, we're in a very busy phase of completing documents. It's quite surprising. I've been on the board for 2 years now, and we've spent a lot of time debating, and we've got stuff out. But we're going to have a lot of documents out in a big rush in the next few months. And I've listed down the ones I could think of. We'll have two standards. We're having two final discussions with FASB on financial instruments. We'll have three exposure drafts, two discussion papers, and a whole lot of narrow scope amendments. And these are all coming out, and I can tell you they're major documents, the 200-300 page documents, and there's a lot of work going on at the moment to get them balloted, to get them finalised and edited and get them published. So the staff are very much heads down and bottoms up and working very hard. The first item on that paper is ASAF. We've got sessions on it later, but I guess we can report we've had the first meeting of ASAP on the 8th and 9th of April. It was, I think, a very successful meeting. I think it went the way we hoped it would go. There are a few debates. There were debates as to, before it met, on who should be members, and there are some countries that were disappointed in missing out, and that's inevitable, I think. There was questions as to whether 12 was the right number or whether we should increase that number, and that would allow some of the disappointed countries to get on. I think the meeting showed that 12 is a good number, that you get bigger than that. It's quite technical debate. It's a very topical technical debate, and I think 12 worked very well. I think everybody participated very well. Contributions were positive and constructive. And it was very timely. It was another reason we needed to do it quickly was it gave them a chance to discuss the concepts document before we issued the discussion paper. And if we hadn't met that early, they wouldn't have had that opportunity. And we were more or less using ASAF as our working group on concepts. So it was very helpful to us to get the 12 views on the preliminary documents we had at that stage. So I think we've done well to get it together. I think we've got a very good group. Our next meeting will be in September, and concepts will be high on the list again, and maybe impairment of financial instruments as well, I think, from memory. In January, which would have been prior to our last meeting, yes, we had the disclosure forum. We would have reported to you on that at the last meeting. We can now say that we've published a feedback statement, and Alan will go through in more detail the steps forward that we'll take on that. Technical projects, as I said, there's a great pile of them there. We're still completing projects with FASB, and we will be until the end of next year, I guess. If we go through them, insurance, we're more or less going in slightly different ways, so we'll be putting out our ED before very long. Revenue, we should have a joint standard out on that, we hope, in the next couple of months. We're just going through the last phases of that. Leasing, we've got our exposure draft out, and that's a joint document, and Charles. Nice to hear that somebody thinks we've done a good job. We don't get those sort of compliments too often. There will be some people in the world who don't think we've done a good job on leasing, and I know it's a surprise to you, but and we've already had a letter from a group of congressmen in the United States who are predicting the end of the world as we know it. And we'll get similar comments from the insurance industry, Jerry, I'm sure, on our insurance document as well. And, you know, we have to listen and take note. On financial instruments, we're meeting with FASB in July to discuss impairment. We've each had documents out, different documents out, on impairment of financial instruments, the loan loss provisioning thing. We're under intense pressure from the G20 and the Financial Stability Board to come up with a converged solution. What should I say about that? I think there's still a chance that we'll get to a converged solution, but we have to wait and see what transpires in the July meeting. The boards, again, are working constructively together, but whether we come to the same opinion in the end, we have to wait and see. And likewise for classification and measurement, we'll also discuss that again with them in July. FASB are coming over to London in July, so we'll have a face-to-face meeting. Hedge accounting, we're about to go. What have I missed out of there? I think I've covered most of them. If I haven't, Sue and Alan will pick me up. SMEs and the exposure draft on the revision of the SME standard, and we'll have a discussion on that at this meeting as well, so I won't go into much detail. Post-implementation review of IFRS 8 has been completed, and we'll have a report out any time now, April? She just smiled, so yes, any time now. And then your consolidation and joint ventures, the next one will be IFRS 3, and how that works. I think it's been a very good process. We are discussing that later too, I think. Yes, we are. And it'll be interesting to let people know how it's gone and how we think we should move in the future. Effects Analysis Consultative Group, we had a first meeting. Alan organises that. I chaired it. I think it was a constructive first meeting, and Alan will run through what the plans are for that going forward. You've mentioned, a couple of you mentioned this morning, integrated reporting. It's not in our report here, but we are still involved. We're still on the council. I attend. Hans is official member. We have a memorandum of understanding with them, which basically says we'll work constructively in a coordinated way together, which is what we will do. I guess our position on that at the moment is we do financial reporting. That's what we'll continue to do. They're looking at the broader picture. Financial reporting is a strong pillar of that broader picture, but what they want to build around it is, and the model they've built, I think, is a good start. It's being tested, and it's up for exposure. I think those are the major topics that I wanted to cover. I'm happy to take any questions, but you can either ask them now or after Alan and Sue have run through in more detail. Any questions on a general basis?
Riaz?
Ian, on the integrated reporting, and I'll link with integrated reporting, the way the project seems to go looks like there might be significant change to the way how the financial reporting aspect is going to be presented. Are we having some influence in how the direction of the financial reporting aspect of the integrated reporting is going to look like?
I hadn't picked that up, Riaz. What I've seen is actually the financial reporting will stay the way it is. It may be with some of the disclosures that you might get them in a different way or a different place, but we really haven't discussed that in detail. But for the basic financial reporting, no real change as a result of integrated reporting. Okay, well...
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the feedback statement on the disclosure forum, and I found it a good summary of various issues and something that I've been recommending to people who have expressed worries about complexity and whatever is a bit of a roadmap, and I think it's an easy read, and it's a good way of reminding people that there is a game plan. I guess we'll come back to that later today in terms of next steps and the broader conceptual piece to it as well.
That, I should mention on that we're not covering that aspect in great depth in the concept discussion paper. Some people are expecting it to be built in. We haven't built it in. We have noted that we have these other things underway and eventually it would get integrated, but there's quite a long way to go in that disclosure framework question, I think, and it's not going to be an easy one to resolve. There's no quick and straightforward answer to the problems we know that exist, particularly in terms of complexity. We're building in myriads of new disclosures in our new standards, and you know, so we're going the opposite way to what people should think, and we really need to step back at some stage and think about how we can rationalise.
All right, well then, turn it over to Alan. Are you going to Sue?
Thanks, Paul. I'll start off with the current agenda update and then Alan will cover all the rest. So looking at the current agenda first and financial instruments. So as you know, we're looking at three phases of financial instruments as part of IFRS 9, so I'll look at each of those separately. So firstly, on classification and measurement, as you might remember, both ourselves and the FASB published exposure drafts on classification and measurement late last year and early this year, which had similar outcomes but different documents that reflected the fact that we already have IFRS 9 in place and they're working on a brand new classification and measurement model. The comment period on both of our exposure drafts is now finished, and so we've started giving feedback to the boards and joint board meetings, and re-deliberations between the two boards will commence properly in July. Yulia will give an update tomorrow on the main feedback that we've got, but not to steal her thunder, but to give you a little bit of flavour. I think the main focus of our re-deliberations will be on improving the articulation of the business models that we use as a basis for the classification and measurement of financial assets. And also IFRS 9 relies heavily on a concept of instruments that have got simple features of principal and interest. And in the exposure draft, we tried to clarify what that meant. And I think it's fair to say that maybe we didn't achieve our clarification objectives. A lot of people have said it's very complex. And so in the re-deliberations, we will go back and try to simplify further the principal and interest concepts in IFRS 9, although I think there's general agreement with the idea there. A particular focus in classification and measurement will be looking at how instruments in some jurisdictions where there's regulated interest rates, particularly in China, should be treated within the classification and measurement model. Looking now at impairment, this is probably the most important part of our review of financial instruments accounting and also one of our most challenging, particularly from a convergence perspective. And as you know, both boards went out with revised exposure drafts, both proposing a move to an expected credit loss model, but with some fundamental differences. And in particular, the FASB have proposed that full lifetime expected credit losses should be recognised on all financial instruments from when they're first recognised. And our board thinks that for a market-priced instrument, that's not appropriate, and rather lifetime expected credit losses should only be recognised if an asset or an instrument deteriorates significantly in credit quality from its initial credit quality. The FASB's exposure draft comment period has ended and ours ends at the beginning of July. Based on the feedback that we've got so far, though, I think it's fair to say that we're still getting a very strong message that it's important that we get to the same solution, but we're similarly getting very strong messages that there's a very big geographic divide still. So not many people telling us how to reach our converged solution, but a lot of appetite for a converged solution. So as Ian said, in July we'll have an in-person meeting with the FASB, and the purpose of that meeting primarily will be to look at the feedback we've received on each of our documents and to try and come up with some ideas of how we might bring the two models at least closer together, even if not fully converged. I'm moving now to...
I could just pause there because I would challenge whether slightly more convergence is really worth the effort. I mean, once it's different, all the energy goes into figuring out the significance of that difference. And so I find myself sort of saying, you know, what is going to cause the two boards to converge? No amount of comment letters, in my judgment, is going to do it. I don't think any amount of discussion is likely to do it. I mean, someone has to blink or you move on. And I guess what's troubling me is people are looking at the two proposals, and some people are saying, yes, I prefer the ISB's approach over FASB's. But I don't think that's nearly the same thing as saying they would accept the ISB proposal. It simply said directionally they think it's better. But if the ISB proposal was out there, I think many would blast the wheels off it for various reasons. So I'm just wondering what is going to happen over the next few months that really gives us any prospect of convergence. And, you know, how much longer are we going to do this dance?
It's good. The last point's your best one, Paul. We all know the difficulties. We all know you're never going to come up with the perfect answer that everybody's going to agree with. But we're, as I say, under very strong pressure and under mandate. This is important internationally. The G20 takes it seriously. The Financial Stability Board takes it seriously. And we are seriously challenged to come up. They can see no sense at all in having different standards in the US and in the rest of the world. So that's where we start from. We've been going for years and years on this. This is our third exposure document. We're going round and round in circles. We all understand, well, we're also under pressure to finish it by the end of this year. So we've got all those pressures. We've got quality of the standard, which you say people would blast out of the water. I think that's an exaggeration, frankly. I think there's reasonable satisfaction with the document. So that's quality. We've got timeliness with the FSB telling us 31st of December this year, and we've got convergence, which they say is a no-brainer. We just have to. So we're human beings, and as we're human beings, we're going to meet. We've each had responses. We haven't had our responses finalised. I think there's a constructive mood in both boards. We're not going to come and just get straight into loggerheads. I think there'll be proper and good discussion. And we'll either come, Sue said we might come to mostly convergence. Well, who knows? We might come to full convergence. We might stay miles apart. We're going to have the conversation in July, and that will give us our steer. If we're not making any progress, we'll head off and do our standard. If we are making progress, we'll have to make the progress quickly. We understand that too. So we understand the problems. We've got a situation we have to deal with. We have a myriad of pressures upon us. July will tell the story, I think.
Jeff.
Thank you, Paul. Just a question. With respect to those two projects, classification measurement project and the impairment project, my understanding, there's been a pretty significant study that's recently been completed that discusses issues related to measurement of financial instruments and how that impacts the evaluation or might impact the evaluation of credit risk, and also which measurement approaches are better predictors of bankruptcy of financial institutions. It was prepared by Tom Linsmeyer, one of the FASB board members, and together with some academics from Stanford University, Michigan State, and the University of Michigan. And I wondered if the board has or is considering discussing that study as part of its redeliberations in connection with the two projects. I personally think it's important to do so, given the close linkage of those projects to the financial crisis and the relevant empirical evidence that study provides. Thank you.
We'll certainly will be looking at it, and I know that, for example, we'll be looking at it to see if there's things in there that we can use for evidence of deterioration, for example, for the impairment project to deal with the timeliness of expected credit loss recognition. I think, though, in terms of a more fundamental impact on the project, I think that we are only looking at limited amendments to IFRS 9, so our potential to move away, for example, from a mixed measurement model, I think that time has passed for now. But we will look at the bits of it to which it's relevant for where the projects are at. So now if I move on to hedge accounting now, in I think the May meeting, the board finished the discussions on the deliberations of Chapter 6, the general hedge accounting model that will be included in IFRS 9. And the board gave the staff permission to move to balloting the hedge accounting chapter. So we hope that that will be finalised probably around August or September and included in IFRS 9. Probably the most significant decision that was made most recently on the hedge accounting was to look at the interaction between the hedge accounting chapter and the macro hedge accounting project. And because of that interaction, the board agreed to allow a choice between entities applying the full hedge accounting model in IAS 39 or the hedge accounting model in IFRS 9 until we complete the macro hedge accounting project. And that was because some had expressed concerns that they may need to change their hedge accounting twice, once to migrate from IAS 39 to IFRS 9 and then again to migrate to the new macro model once it's completed, and they felt that that was inappropriate. The other part of IFRS 9 I'll just touch on briefly is the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9. It's currently the 1st of January 2015. The board typically allows at least 18 months from when we finalise an IFRS till its mandatory effective date. Obviously, we're not going to be finished by the 30th of June this year, so we expect the board to reconsider the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9. I think it will be moved, and the period to which it is moved will depend on the feedback we get, in particular on the impairment project, where we've asked people for feedback on the likely lead time they'd need to implement the new expected loss model. Okay, so that's IFRS 9. Now, macro hedge accounting, the accounting for dynamic risk management, a very complicated area. We hope that the discussion paper on that, so the very first step in the process for that, should be published later in 2013. So that completes. There's one other thing on financial instruments which I'll mention, which isn't strictly current agenda, but I'm sure Alan won't mind, which is the novation of derivatives. The board has agreed to do a limited scope amendment to IAS 39 and to put a similar change into IFRS 9's new hedge accounting chapter to allow entities to continue hedge accounting if they are required, or if they novate a hedging derivative in response to the introduction of legislation or regulations which requires the use of central clearing parties. And this is an initiative that's happening all over the world in response to changes in legislation that have come in as a request of the G20 to reduce risk in the system by encouraging over-the-counter derivatives to be cleared through central clearing parties. And so people wanted to be able to continue hedge accounting in those situations. We hope that that amendment will be published by the end of June. All right, so that finishes financial instruments. Moving then on to lease accounting. It's good that Charles has said that people think we've listened. I think there'll be a mix of views on whether it was a good or a bad idea for us to have listened so much. We've published a second exposure draft on lease accounting just last month. We're very pleased that it's essentially an identical exposure draft with the FASB, which is a very difficult thing to achieve, but we've gone out with identical proposals. That exposure draft basically would require all leases, except leases with a term of less than 12 months, to be put on the balance sheet. But a distinction would be made in P&L depending on the type of lease, and this is what Charles is referring to. Originally, the P&L profile for all leases would have been the same. And people told us that they thought that there was a spectrum of economics in different leases, and having this high-low profile that would come from amortising the lease, the right-of-use asset, and expensing the interest expense on the lease didn't always reflect what they felt were the economics of the lease. So to reflect that feedback, the proposal is that for essentially real estate leases, the P&L profile would be straight line, and for other leases, it would be a high-low profile. And so that's what we've put out to comment for a 120-day comment period. We'll be doing extensive outreach during that period, mainly jointly with the FASB. The other big success from a convergence perspective has been the revenue recognition project. The boards are just about finished the deliberations on that project, and we're moving to a final IFRS. We're very happy that at the moment we have identical proposals proposed between ourselves and the FASB on revenue recognition, which is a huge achievement. We hope that that IFRS should be published probably by about September, I think, is what Leslie said publicly last week. We're thinking about doing something which we haven't done before in order to support the revenue recognition publication, something that we still need to talk to our trustees about, but establishing a short-term group which would help in the initial application of the revenue standard up until the mandatory effective date, just to ensure that people are reading the words the way that we'd intended that they'd be read. So we're proposing to set up a group which would be joint with the FASB, which would be effectively a public discussion forum where we would discuss general fact patterns and confirm whether or not people were reading the words in the way that the boards had intended. And as I said, it's really intended, because revenue is a very important figure in the P&L, to make sure that people are reading the words consistently and in the way that we intend, and also to try and prevent the new requirements turning quickly into industry-specific guidance, which is what we've tried to move away from with the new revenue recognition model.
So I'd like to just pause there. I saw that proposal. Thought it was an excellent idea in terms of striking a balance between not cranking out authoritative guidance, but on the other hand, being responsive to the significant issues that undoubtedly arise as people move to apply the standard. But I just wanted to pause and see if there were reactions of other council members. As I understand it, this would be a public discussion. I'm assuming, maybe I ought not to assume, but that it would be broadly populated, so it's not just a bunch of technical. But, you know, there'd be preparers and auditors and the full range of perspectives. Is that?
Yeah, the proposal, and I'm very nervous here because we don't have our trustees' approval yet, but the idea that the staff have been thinking about would be that it would be a forum that would be comprised of representatives of both the FASB and the ISB board and staff members, but also representatives from the accounting firms and from preparers, and probably also with some securities regulators as at least observers in the process.
If I may, it raises one other interesting question. When we have a converged standard, as we have with revenue recognition, or as we hope we'll have, how do we keep it converged over the longer term? So that's something else we need to address. We haven't gone into that in depth, but it needs a bit of thinking. And you know.
Francois, did you?
Thank you, Paul. Well, I certainly think it's an interesting initiative in helping the implementation of a standard goes into the right direction. I also understand the need not to diverge in the U.S. implementation from the European implementation or other parts of the world. The point, though, I think, which needs to be carefully taken care of is how this group can be introduced and whether there should not be a strong flavor of education initiative, so that nobody can say that you know, the standard has been published before it was ready, before it was ready, so that the implementation efforts that are done are not analyzed as being compensating for work in progress, in fact, if you see what I mean. So I think it's extremely important that this is very well introduced, very carefully introduced, and maybe not limited to the revenue recognition, but maybe there is some thinking to have on when a standard is pervasive whether consistent implementation of principle-based standards do not require more educational effort, and that would be part of that effort.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Francis, and we're aware of the traps we might fall into if we're not very careful.
I see. Bruce.
Hi, thanks. I guess the comment to us was pretty much exactly the same. I guess the only concern that I would have, I think these type of groups are fantastic for technical people. I guess the only concern that I've seen in practice is whenever we get groups together who discuss things, it becomes very difficult for people who don't agree and then say, well, we want to apply something different. So inadvertently, the ISB could end up issuing guidance that, yes, officially is not official ISB guidance, but in practice, obviously, can become very difficult for people to not follow. So this is just something in practice we have seen, and I just, as much as I do support, I think it's a great idea, I just think there should be caution in it.
Gavin.
I guess I just wanted to make the comment, of course, this is not the first time, I guess, the ISB's been there. I think about the implementation group for IS39, and obviously all of the IGCs that we ended up with in IS39. So whilst in concept has value, I think the design of it is pretty important, particularly when you think about the legacy of it a number of years on.
Maybe if I could just respond. Yes, I'd agree absolutely with that. And I think the idea with it would be that there would be nothing produced by this this actual group itself. So there'd be public discussion, but if there was any need to produce additional material, if you like, that would be rooted through the interpretation committee, or it would come back to the board. So it wouldn't be a new group that would end up publishing extra materials of its own, if you like, or it may in fact result in production of educational material, but from the organisation as a whole, rather than us having another group that's now writing literature, because I'd agree completely that the IGs took on a bit of a life of their own.
Jim. That won't stop you.
Right. So true. Thank you. I like this idea very much. I guess my question to the IASB, once the trustees give you the blessing, is what is the reference to limited life? Again, I like the idea, but is that 1 year after the implementation date to give us some chance not only to think through the questions people are wrestling with before they have to adopt it, but in fact using the retrospective of 1 year on, saying, oops, I wish we'd had a chance to think about this more fully. So I don't know what you think limited life means. I like the idea of limited life, but I don't want it to terminate on the implementation date of the standard.
We'll have to think that through, Jim. We always have implementation issues on any standard, and we don't remain deaf to them. In the past, we haven't often had a group like this, but we do change things immediately. So whether you want to run the group on or not, probably we can make up our mind as time goes by.
Jerry?
Thank you, Paul. We had a issue arise that was developed principally by the Canadian life insurance companies, but which was focused on the post-implementation review. And yet the concept is very similar to what you're describing here, and for very complex standards, whether or not they're joint standards, actually didn't have a bearing in terms of the way the issue arose for the insurance industry in North America. But it had to do with especially principles-based standards, which are in very complex environments, and then the implementation process itself, and where we right now have a two-year kind of limit on when the PIR process starts, was the suggestion was going to be something like being able for these kinds of standards to advance that process somewhat. Now, exactly how the idea was simply to give, it was actually in the context of PIR. But as I listened to you describe this, the line between these two things is really rather narrow. And it could be that one could get the authority for such a process and would maybe deal with the issue that Jim has raised by simply having this be a unique, specific decision on specific standards for application in complex situations as part of the post-implementation review.
We might discuss that in the later session, but we had two lots of comments on post-implementation reviews. One was we're doing them too early, and the other was we're doing them too late. And so it's quite a complicated debate whether this needs to be extended into a PIR. I think the arguments against going too early, and I appreciate with complicated standards you might need more assistance, but the arguments are they haven't really bedded down and people haven't got over their initial, in the post-implementation review, we're trying to get to really basic faults or problems with the standard, and they need to be used for a while before you find those out.
I see four cards up. Shazan?
I have a question related to impairment project. In a February meeting, I got the impression that the three-stage approach to the impairment was a decision reached by the ISB and will not change significantly. But just now you mentioned that in July, you are going to talk to the FASB to try to achieve the convergence with the FASB. My concern is that will the three-stage approach change significantly? And when will this project be finished and implemented? If this project is going to be implemented, say, in 2015, the time is very short, and especially say in China, we got to, to translate it, and we got to, to provide a lot of trainings in education. So my concern is that we change this impairment project, the approach, the methodology to the impairment project, change it from time to time, from the, expected cash flow model to the three bad book and good book and bad book approaches, and also three bucket approach. Right now it's three stage approach. So when will this be finished? Is this project going to be delayed for a long time as a result to convergence with the ISB?
That's a good point, and it's one I tried to make earlier that we're well aware of the timeliness question. And I can't predict what will happen in the meeting, but I'd be surprised if we moved a long way from the model we exposed, but we have to wait and see. Sue's already mentioned that we'll probably review the 2015 implementation date because all of these projects have run on a bit. So, we're aware of your concerns. This project, in my personal opinion, has to be drawn to a close. We can't be out with another exposure draft for another methodology. I think our board is quite determined to get the project finalised, and we will be reviewing the application date to make sure people have time.
Up this side, Andrew.
Thank you, Paul. Just on the revenue forum, a couple of brief points. One on the time period that this might be in place for. It's certainly a very welcome proposal. I hope the trustees will look on it favourably. In practice, we find that in many cases when we have new standards, the issues only really start popping out when we get very much towards the effective date and in a period for a couple of years after that. And so you might give a little bit of thought as to the time period. I appreciate short-term and temporary, but that might extend a little bit into the period after implementation. It may also be an interesting model for other projects where you have had a largely converged solution with the FASB. it's going to be quite challenging to keep both sides of the Atlantic in much the same place. And there may be some lessons to learn from IFRS 3, where we have seen sometimes identical wording being interpreted slightly differently in the US compared to IFRS. So just a couple of thoughts to bear in mind. Thank you.
I'll just quickly say that I think your first point was the same point that Jerry was making, and, you know, it's a legitimate point. And I think the other one responds to the point I made, that it's going to be, we're going to have to look into how we keep standards converged once they are converged, yeah.
Zynga?
Just to follow on, I think this I actually see this as a good mechanism to try to help facilitate consistent application of standards, because it really provides the forum for discussion. And as you can tell, whenever you're implementing something, there could be differences in interpretation of the various items. So as the ISB looks more towards, you know, going from the phase of adoption to more really consistent application of standards, I actually see a mechanism like this being used, you know, more going forward.
I agree. The one thing we have to watch is that we don't run into start making rules. So we have groups like this all over the place who are making rules here and rules there, and then we're... So we have to strike a balance. And I think revenue recognition is a good place to start. It's a very important standard. It is a fully converged one. Let's wait and see how it works, but I'd be very cautious about having lots of groups discussing lots of particular situations, and there'd be pressure on us to either amend or to make a rule or to issue guidance. And we still want the market to work on principle-based standards and use judgment, so we have to be careful not to take that away.
All right, I see two cards remaining, and then we'll turn it back to Sue. So, Karen?
Thanks, Paul. Sue, I think I heard you say that part of the reason for forming this working group is to deter, prevent, whatever the right word is, industry interpretation of the standards. And I would just encourage you to, if we're going to do this, to do it fast and soon, because at least one industry group is already formed and busy working away at interpreting the standard.
Ernesto.
Hi. Regarding IFRS 9, I mean, we are concerned that preparers, with all the expected credit losses in receivables, will bring a lack of comparability and a lot of complexity. So, for the industry, it's going to be a nightmare just trying to assess these expected credit losses. And we'd be very much in favor of actual credit losses or something that would leave less room for interpretation.
So, well, could I just ask you, what would you prefer? Could you just repeat that? I'm sorry, I didn't quite...
Yeah, in general, with all the, trade receivables, it's very difficult to make all the companies converge on what an expected trade loss is, right? I mean, usually you provide for when actually you don't get paid or you get delayed, you have to refinance. Doing an expectation of credit losses would mean that a lot of people would interpret different things. It would be a lack of comparability. That would be a nightmare.
Expected losses are difficult.
That's the problem.
And where we begin.
Paul, sorry, just one last question on the implementation group for Sue. At some point I had heard that there was also an idea that in the US there would be an implementation group on revenue recognition. Is it correct then that if you set up this group that this will be a global initiative and therefore not a separate US initiative?
Exactly. We're trying to do it jointly with the FASB.
All right, if I could just double check here. Most people commenting on the implementation group were, I sense, supportive of it, urging caution. It's always tricky business, distinguishing education as opposed to things that take on authority whether you want it or not, which was a problem with the joint venture material. And it's certainly not meant to be a way of compensating for a standard that's not yet ready for issuance, and I think which was Francoise's point that we don't want to create the impression that we're lacking confidence in the quality of the standard. It's much more the significant transition, especially, I think, for those U.S. gappers around. I mean, this is a monumental change in terms of style of standard. And my experience is the discussions are going to happen whether you want them or not. The issue in my mind is not whether the issues will be discussed. It's whether do you want to facilitate that and get it out in the open so that others can benefit and contribute, which personally I think is useful. So my sense is the council is supportive of the proposal, if that's helpful input to the board and the trustees. I think that's very, very timely. And details can and will be sorted out if it gets the green light. So I just, that's my takeaway. Is there anyone who, all right, then Sue, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you. I'll report that to the Due Process Oversight Committee when we discuss it with them. Last from my side is the insurance contracts project, and I think Andrea and Issa are going to give you a summary of this later in the meeting, so I'll just comment on timing. So we hope, touch wood, that the exposure draft will be issued in the next few weeks by the end of June, and as we've said previously, it will be a targeted exposure draft, reflecting the fact that it's the second exposure draft and also the fact that we would like to get our insurance contracts requirements in place sooner rather than later. So there'll be five areas of questions in the document which focus on the main areas of change since the previous exposure draft, and then one overall question that will focus on the clarity of the drafting and whether it all fits together. So almost like a fatal flaw or review draft type overriding question. So that will go out by the end of June to be followed by extensive outreach and also some field work with a 120-day comment period. And sorry, on that one, our document will be similar in terms of timing to the FASB. I think that they're going to be publishing exposure draft, I think, in July, last I heard, but a different document to ours, but people will at least be able to compare and contrast because there'll be a large overlap in the comment periods.
Okay, if I can I want to talk about four basic topics, if I can. We've got about 20 minutes left, I think, in the session. Disclosure feedback statement and some steps that I'll outline that we're going to be taking. Effects analysis, the working group, and where we're heading with that. A little bit about something that's not in the report itself, but you'll see at the back of the work plan a very large list of research projects, and I'm just going to briefly mention a couple of the things that we've been doing over the last couple of months on that. And the fourth thing is to have a look very quickly at the narrow scope projects, because we've got quite a range of those. If I can start with the disclosure forum and the feedback statement, it's been mentioned we published that at the end of May. It's about 40 pages long, so I think it's a reasonably comprehensive summary of what we have found out over the last 6 months or so, and particularly from the disclosure forum that we held at the end of January. What it does is it outlines the steps we intend to take, and what I'll do is just mention very quickly some of the short, medium and longer term steps we are going to take. The two short-term steps which are most significant are, first of all, we're looking at proposing and taking to our board in September, because we're in June now, we hit July and then we don't meet in August, but in September we will take our first papers proposing some changes to IS1. And the thing we found out with IS1 in particular is that, if anything, it's actually preventing people from communicating in terms of the financial statements. And the sort of example that I use often, and they're easy to talk about, you know, people say, well, we have these boilerplate accounting policies at the front. And if you read IS1, and I think it might be an example I gave you last time, it says we only want substantive accounting policies. And then the example it uses is income taxes, and said, if a company pays income taxes, we expect to see a policy for it. Well, most people do. Most companies pay income tax, and therefore I'd expect to see a policy. And almost the implication is, well, if they've got revenue, I want to see a policy. If I've got anything, I want to see a policy. So it's not surprising that we end up with 6 or 7 pages of accounting policies, particularly where many of those policies, there's actually no choice. And so all we end up seeing is a summary of the accounting standard itself. So when we see wording like that within IAS 1, we're going to propose some changes that essentially will release people from that, I guess, the straitjacket that is implied by the IS1 wording. We've got six or seven smaller amendments we want to make, and they are things like a way to bring more attention to the fact that within IS1 it says you don't have to disclose something if it's not material to the users. We're very cautious. I note the comments we got at our last meeting, that take that with a bit of caution, because a lot of investors like more rather than less. But our sense is that the changes we're making are relatively small in themselves. If anything, it's a psychological change that's most important. Because what we've heard through consistently is that this is a shared problem between the standard setters, the regulators, the securities regulators, the auditors, the preparers and the investors. You know, even the investors often demand more than they perhaps should do. One of our speakers at the forum, I think, had an excellent presentation, and he said sometimes we should stop asking for information, actually do the analysis ourselves instead of demanding all the time. But I think people saw that even if it's a problem that we all share, the ISB is in a central position and is the ideal organisation to take the first steps. And by taking some very small steps with IAS1, we hope that's the catalyst for a bit of change. Okay, so that's September, October, those papers to the board, and then obviously we'll roll out any potential changes in exposure drafts. The second short-term thing is materiality. There's not a lot of guidance in IAS's on what materiality or material means. We have a very general statement in our statement of concepts and a few more words in IS1. We've been asked to look to see whether we should develop, although it's nervous about saying this, education material, because the education material, doesn't matter what colour you put on the cover of the document, if it comes out of the ISB, it's perceived to have a pretty similar weighting anyway, I suspect, in practice. So it's whether it's application guidance or some educational material, but we are going to get together a group internally and then work very closely with the securities regulators, the auditors and preparers and investors to try and see if we can develop in the short term some extra help on how to assess materiality. And for example, later this week at the joint sessions between our global preparers and the CMAC, our investor group, we're going to see if they can tell us what they think significant accounting policies are. In other words, what differentiates a significant policy from one that's not significant. So that's the type of guidance or work I think could be quite helpful. So they're the short-term things. The medium-term, we are going to, the way I describe it anyway, is I guess blow the dust off the covers of our financial statement presentation project. There's a lot of good thinking that went on to that, and some of it's been reflected in our conceptual framework. But as Ian said, a lot of, the nuts and bolts things that people would like to see in terms of disclosure framework, we won't find in our conceptual framework. That's going to be a standards level project. So we're going to have a look to see at all the work we did in financial statement presentation. Within essence, the simple way to describe it is develop a new IFRS eventually to replace IS1, which tells me what the income statement and balance sheet should look like and what the notes have, IS7, cash flow statement, and IAS8, which tells you about comparability and changes in policies, etc. Try to bring those into one accounting standard, and essentially, for want of a better term, that's kind of like a disclosure framework. Now, that's a medium-term project. The idea is to do research on that over the next couple of years while we're developing the conceptual framework, so that once we finish the framework and we're at that point, we're just probably leading right into our new consultation again on our agenda, public consultation, we should be in a position to put a nice, clear proposal together that people can consider as part of our agenda consultation process to see whether we should go ahead and develop this more detailed disclosure framework. Okay, so that's more of a medium-term thing. Now, part of that will be having a look through and a sweep through every IAS and every IFRS that we do have to see whether or not there are specific items in there that are creating a disclosure problem. We're going to do a few things in the shorter term because we've already started the post-implementation review of IFRS 3, our business combination standard, and that's one we actually have heard where people think we've got excellent objectives, but then we spoil it by saying in meeting those objectives an entity shall disclose, and then it creates a checklist of disclosure requirements. So we're going to see, I think, in the post-implementation review whether something will come out of that we should do in the shorter term. But essentially, again, this will be more research in the background so that by the time we finish conceptual framework, we'll be well placed to potentially make some more sweeping changes to disclosure. We don't want to jump ahead of these framework discussions. The other short-term things we're looking at is one thing is our wording, and just to as a rough idea, I gave that example of IFRS 3 where we're very prescriptive. People find they struggle with those words when they see an entity shell, and they don't believe that IS1's general, if it's not material, don't disclose. How could that possibly override such clear and prescriptive requirements in a standard? And so some of the ideas that we're looking at, and you'll see from rate regulated activities, we've actually modified our wording slightly and tried to get, I won't call it softer wording, but more principle-based disclosure wording in there. And one of the thoughts is that we actually say something like, in meeting the set objective, the type of information an entity should consider disclosing is, and then list. But the list would be quite a long list and deliberately have some overlaps to indicate that you couldn't go through this and have that as a checklist because of deliberate overlaps. In other words, there are alternative but helpful ways of presenting information. There's a lot of work to get there because, you know, investors may say, well, that's inconsistent, you've got overlaps in there. So that's something we're going to work through quite cautiously. But those are the types of things that we're doing as part of that. So I don't know if you want to pause very quickly on disclosure before I go to the other updates.
Any comments or questions? Anne.
Yes, I just wish to raise one particular area of disclosure, and I don't know whether you dealt with it or you're going in to deal with it with the narrow scope activities, but the investor community are still very concerned about the going concern assumption made by management, looked at by auditors, and we want probably more information from both of the above on this issue. It's not something that's going away. It was definitely there at the year end of 2007-2008, particularly over the December rollover period. But in the economic environment we're in, and I know standards are not for just one period in time, it is something that is fundamental to the investor community. If you look at a CFA review that was undertaken in 2012, more than 53% of us think it's the highest, most important disclosure that we'd be wanting to look at. And the area that we're looking for more information is on what is a material uncertainty that will trigger the disclosure that we're looking for. This discussion has come up, and I'd like to see that the board might be relating to the other discussions. This discussion has come up particularly in the area of changes to the audit report from the IAASB, and so I'd like to see perhaps a little bit more information on exactly how you're going to further describe the material uncertainties. Greater clarity in this area would be helpful.
Because it's very specific, if I respond to that, April is sitting over here, is off to New York next week, I believe, to meet with the IAASB, no, phone?
Meeting in London,
sorry. Okay. So she's meeting with people next week. The plan is by September, so it coincides with the rest of these changes, she'll be bringing a paper back to the board with a proposal, and we would wrap that up into this package of changes. So going concern is pretty much on. We've done a lot of work through Interpretations Committee, and April's been doing a lot of work with small groups amongst our board members on the wording and working directly with the IAASB.
Liz?
Thank you, Paul. As institutional investors, we very much welcome the work that you're doing on the disclosure framework, and I'd also just endorse what Anne has said in relation to going concern. I think this is very much welcome, and it will help ensure that the financial statements and the accounts as a whole tell more of a story. But I'd just like to highlight one concern. I mean, you said you were going to do some work on terms of defining materiality. There seems to be a lot of people are seeking to define materiality at present. The Integrated Reporting Council has sought to define materiality in its consultation draft. And really, I think it'd be very confusing if we get everybody defining materiality. And I think it's something that the ISB should grab and do.
All right. Zynga, did you have a point or is that?
Thanks. Alan I think this is also, we are also very supportive of the work being done in this area on disclosure framework. And one question that we had is, how do you plan to make sure that it's complementary with the whole area of integrated reporting? Because there are quite a lot of initiatives trying to address this question on disclosure and trying to make disclosure more meaningful. And I think it's important for there to be, for these various initiatives to be complementary, you know, as opposed to try coming up with things which may be contradictory to each other. So this is a perfect opportunity, I think, to really try to address some of the principles and see, well how best does this fit? How best does this fit in the framework of IAS, International Financial Reporting Standards? Thanks.
Just an observation triggered by Liz's comments. Sitting on both sides of the fence as involved with a user organisation and also company director preparing reports. I understand the desire for some consistent definition, if you can call it that, of materiality, but I think there has to be an element of judgment involved. And I was recently involved where a public company made a disclosure on a revised profit forecast for one of its divisions, which in the context of the overall size of the group was absolutely not material. But the reason it did that was because there may have been some actions taken with a certain class of securities that with hindsight people might have been critical of had the company not disclosed that in one of its divisions things weren't travelling all that well. So, and I'm trying to think how one might have excuse me, had a standard definition in terms of materiality, and I would have thought that any definition would have actually not required a disclosure in that instance, but the board exercised its judgment, thinking this was material in the context of something else.
Okay. Just a response to integrated reporting as well. As Ian said, we were involved. I'm on the working group and technical task force, and I happen to be on the materiality subgroup as well, and they were quite tortuous discussions, believe me, because some people had a very interesting view of materiality, and we hopefully got it back closer to the concept that's built into IFRS. But I certainly take your point about differences when you talk about materiality and have different wording. I don't see, as Ian said as well, the integrated reporting changing fundamentally the way our financial reports are shaped, because the integrated is about bringing the financial reporting together with the other components and the other information and having an integrated view of how they interact with each other, which is at a higher level, and that's underpinned by the financial statements. Virtually every integrated reporting picture that I've seen has financial reports as being the core and anchor.
Thomas, did you have a point?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to make a small remark on the question of accounting policies. If you look from the securities regulator's point of view, one of the key issues is that they should be consistent and they shouldn't be misleading if they do this in disclosures. And that is something probably you should highlight as well when you get to IS1 once again. Put a little bit more pressure on consistency and that there shouldn't be too much, let's say, leeway for the preparers to show whatever they want to show, and there has to be a consistent picture at the end, especially when you look at non-GAAP measures, which might flow into this as well. That is one of the concerns we hear from analysts and also from securities regulators' point of view, that you probably might have a look if you look at a small amendment to IS1 as well. Thank you.
Alan, you've got about 5 minutes to wrap this up.
Okay. So, very quickly, effect analysis. We have a working group that the trustees asked us to put together. I'm very pleased with the membership of that. We have about 16, 17 people on that. It includes, I don't want to offend anybody, leaving them off, but EFRAG, representatives from the UK, Paul Beswick sat through the meeting from the SEC, the European Commission sent two people across. So it's a very international group. we really are aiming to do two things out of the group. One is, and that has produced two tangible reports. One is a report from the group itself recommending to our board how it should undertake effect analysis and field work and then communicate that information. And the second is use the knowledge that's within that particular group as well to produce what I would loosely call application guidance for our due process handbook, so that when a staff member comes along to identify how they could start doing field work, how they should report that, what sorts of things or techniques they should use in their effect analysis, they basically have a bit of a toolkit as well. So we hope that will come out of the group as well. I hope this sounds, it's a very positive way of thinking about it, but to me the important thing is for us to produce high quality standards. The goal is not to produce a high quality effect analysis, that should just be a natural part of it, if that makes sense. What's really interesting is that the way we communicate an effect analysis is very important. And my read of from the first meeting of the group and the general feeling is that people want to see effect analysis thinking integrated into the board's thinking. In other words, as the board is quite aware of how it's going to change the nature of financial statements and it's considered those issues very carefully, it's made choices, cost-benefit choices, very rationale thinking. On the other hand, they want to have that reported separately as an effects analysis because the readers, potential readers of that, are not necessarily the people who are going to go through the basis of conclusions. And I think we'll see with revenue recognition, we've got, you know, it'll be 200-page basis or something like that. That's not what the European Commission and others want to see for an effects analysis. So we have a bit of a challenge here to integrate the thinking into our basis but have a separate report. And we have been experimenting in a sense. The first ones we did were separate, and then we've started integrating them more into the basis. We may have to see how that evolves over the next 6 months. But at the moment, the group is scheduled to meet again at the end of July, and our plan is to try and get a first draft of a report, a working draft, together by the end of June, so that we've got that as a basis for our discussions in July, because we're very keen to wrap up this group by November of this year and report to our trustees straight after that. Then the other thing I was just going to mention as well, I won't go through them, but we have quite a wide range of small, what we call implementation type issues and narrow scope amendments, rate regulated. We have an interim standard or an ED for an interim standard is now out that would grandfather existing practice. We're close to putting out a proposal for separate financial statements to allow the use of the equity method for investments in subsidiaries. That will has to wait for one more issue to come up. The Italians in particular have been asking us to look at an issue in separate financial statements related to joint ventures, and it's important that we have that considered as part of this package. We're very close to releasing an exposure draft on bearer plants that moves bearer plants from IAS 41, the agricultural standard, to IAS 16, which we jokingly called property plant and equipment now, or plants and equipment now, rather than property plant and equipment. So that's the rubber trees and so on will be in IAS 16. Then we have quite a range of annual improvements and narrow scope amendments. I do want to make one point. When we talked about going concern and Anne raised the issue about whether we were going to do that, we have at the moment on our schedule, the plan is to have that as a separate ED. But we've been looking at the list, and we've got nine documents coming out for comment in the next couple of weeks. Essentially, we'll have nine at once. We're very worried about the ability for people to cope with that. So where we can, we're going to try and rationalise those things. So where we've got one or two IS1 amendments, we bundle those up with the disclosure ones. And it's the same sort of thing. We've got, I think, two or three related to IS28, which deals with the equity method. We're going to try and bundle those together. So you'll see, hopefully over the next 6 months or so, a slight rationalisation of our work plan. Michael's doing some work for the Interpretations Committee on trying to see if we can rationalise the way we do that, because we are very worried about overload.
Thanks, Alan. You've covered a lot of ground. Jerry, did you have a comment? Or?
Thank you, Paul. Yes, it had to do with a going concern comment that was raised. At the last two meetings of the advisory group to the Public Company Accounting Standards Oversight Board at the U.S., this issue has been raised. And the question was whether the initiative for putting a stronger momentum behind that project should come about was between the FASB and the PCAOB. And what has happened in that case, you're probably already all aware of this, is that the FASB has put this project back onto more of a front burner. I'm not too sure how much of a front burner on its agenda. But we also were addressed at the last meeting. I sit on the advisory group to the PCAOB where this was raised. At the last meeting of the advisory group, the International Auditor Oversight Group was addressing their initiative in this arena. And I guess that the only question that we had is that the advisory group to the PCAOB strongly felt that FASB was the place where the leadership should take place. I guess as a member of the advisory council to this board, I would recommend the same thing would be true of the ISB. I don't know what level of, and I imagine it's significant, but I just wanted to get this on the table, that there are these two different places where the intersection comes in this determination relative to the coordination by the IASB with the international side and with the U.S. side as this effort goes forward.
And Alan, did I hear you correctly? You expect there'll be something in September? So that's a very prompt response, and I sense many members supporting the importance of doing what we can rather than waiting for the problems to erupt and then scrambling to try and explain why the financial reporting didn't get the message across. All right.
Could I make just one point, Paul? Just having listened to all this, it becomes obvious that we're putting out a large number of documents on very important topics, and we'll be doing a large amount of outreach in the next 6 months for the rest of this year. We're going to try and coordinate it as best we can, but it's not always possible to coordinate insurance and leasing and concepts and whatever else we've got out there. So in your countries, you'll probably see ISB people dashing in and out. Please be kind to them. They've all got important work to do, and we are going to be stretching our constituents' patience a bit, you can just see.
Well, when we coined that phrase, period of calm, we did remind ourselves that in no way did it guarantee a period of calm in terms of documents coming out, and that's the way it's playing out. But I sense welcome relief in having the material come out, and some of these debates just have to come to a timely closure. Speaking of which, I think we are on time for our break. If we could keep it to 15 minutes, please. I understand the tea and coffee and whatnot is just outside meeting rooms, and the toilets, I believe, are either end. It may appear a bit dark, but the lights do come on. Thank you.